Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen. We're here to pump up your parenting skills, pump up your knowledge, and pump up your energy. Welcome to Parent Pump Radio. Our show is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, at missionsradio.org, and liveleadplay.com. Parent Pump Radio is brought to you by Integrative Minds. Become the leader you were meant to be. Lead a productive, purposeful, and successful life. Leave a multi-generational legacy in wealth, health, and happiness for your family and loved ones. Go to integrativeminds.com. Email them to schedule your complimentary consultation. Today's show is about college tuition. And according to the College Board, the average cost of tuition and fees for the 2016-2017 school year was $33,480 at a private college, over $9,000 for state residents at public college, and almost $25,000 for out-of-state residents attending public university. There was a total of $184 billion in undergraduate aid available in 2014 and 15 in the form of federal, state government, college and university, and private organization. But you need to know about it. You need to understand about it, and you need to apply for it. And I have an expert guest today. But before I introduce her, I'd like to introduce you to Brian Chow, who is my special co-host for the day. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me again. It's really great to be on the show.
Brian is a sophomore at the University of Pennsylvania. Today's episode, I think, is right in line with the college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It pertains a lot to other students are going through, so I think it's great.
Absolutely. On to our guest. Our guest today has worked in the financial aid and higher education for over 20 years, assisting students with financial means to achieve their goal of a college education. She considers herself a world encourager, and her vision is to encourage others around the world, helping them to overcome obstacles and to reach their goals and dreams. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Mary Banos. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. I want to talk about who you are and what inspires you. I know that you foster adolescent girls. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. In 2007, I became a foster parent of teenage girls, ages 13 to 17. I would have up to three girls at a time in my home, so it was a continual cycle and turnover. And I fostered a total of 12 girls during my 2 years and a month as a foster parent. And of those 12 years, girls, years ago, five are daughters to me now.
Wow. Thank you for doing that. I know the foster system is not a good place for children to be. And I know you have an amazing hero's journey. That's what I call it, from where you came as a child and, you know, where you are now. But can you tell us about some of the things that you overcame as a child or what happened in your childhood?
Oh, sure. First of all, I had what I considered a traumatic childhood. Let's just say three of my four brothers ended up incarcerated, if that tells you anything from my childhood. I'm the oldest of five with four brothers. My first brother was in jail all his life and committed suicide in 2009. My second and third brothers are now incarcerated for like 28 years and going. And then my fourth brother never got in trouble, but then he was a biological child of the stepfather who abused the rest of us. So he had an easy way. Went through a lot of different things. Went through child sexual abuse, emotional, mental abuse. During my teenage years, I was continually depressed and suicidal. Almost killed myself a couple of times during my high school years. And then fortunately, I was able to make it through that and go off to college. And that's where I started finding my healing. God brought people to my life that I could start learning how to open up and learn how to talk and learn how to get all those things out of me, learn how to receive encouragement, learn how to encourage myself. And from all of that, encouragement just became my passion.
Yeah, it sounds like being able to speak about it and write about it. So all that communication, did that help you?
Oh, a great deal. And really, the biggest part was when I started having the friends in college who helped me it was finally having people to talk to face to face and who wanted to listen. Until I was in the 12th grade, I never had a friend and I never had anyone to talk to. Till this day, I've never had anyone older as a mentor or a parent or an aunt and uncle kind of figure in my life. It's only been friendships. And the real turn for me was meeting people who were new friends who actually cared and wanted to hear me and wanted me to talk. I had never had that before.
Well, you know, when you say that, it kind of reminds me, Brian is part of our speaker in our Teen to Parent Talk series, where I talk to college students about, you know, things that they overcame or what they're going through. And Brian, tell us about your talk.
First of all, that's an incredible story, Mary. I mean, wow, I can't believe you were able to go through all that. And I think that's absolutely incredible and empowering.
Thank you.
To know that you've been able to come out on the other side. But yeah, I mean, I remember speaking a little bit about mental illness and loneliness and depression and how that can affect day-to-day life. And I also talked a little bit about how divorce can affect a child's life when they're growing up. But I mean, I think that's, just going back to what I said earlier, Mary, I mean, I think that's really incredible that you're able to pay it forward, just given everything that's been able to go on in your life. And I think that's the whole message about being able to pay it forward when there wasn't anyone to really guide you. I think that's really just a great story.
Yeah, you're an inspiration and definitely an encouragement, which leads me into your book about the power of encouragement. Can you talk to briefly about your book and how listeners could get it?
So my book is called Uplifting One Life at a Time with a subtitle, The Power of Encouragement. I started writing it during the time that I was grieving my brother's suicide in 2009 because I always try to find positives in a negative situation. I didn't have anything positive there. So I use that negative time to put something positive. In writing my book, I do a few different things. One, I share my own journey of people who ministered to me and encouraged me and helped me and how I learned to help myself. But I also share stories of many different people and their obstacles they overcame, because my hope is that every reader connects to someone in the book. And my favorite thing that I've heard from readers is that I've had people say that in reading my book, it felt like a friend was talking to them. And that I love. And my book is on Amazon mainly. It's also available online with Barnes & Noble.
The link to her book is also in the show notes. You say feeling lonely, and I remember Brian talking also about loneliness. Even though he had friends around and there were people around, there's this feeling that no one could hear you or understand you. Is that what you're talking about, Mary?
Yes, exactly. Like one of my key moments, and I shared this when I wrote my book and my story. For example, I was in the 12th grade and I had an English class and my teacher was Mr. Davison, and it was around Christmas and I was depressed. And he came over to my desk one day and said, you know, Mary, everyone gets depressed every now and then or something like that. And he walked away. And even though that wasn't actual conversation, nothing changed that day. That was huge. I still remember it till this day, because that's the first time in my life when I was in 12th grade that someone saw it. Someone saw me and knew I was hurting and said something. That by itself helped a great bit.
It's like being acknowledged.
Exactly.
That acknowledgement is so powerful. Let's get into what the topic of our show today is about financial aid and how you can help.
Okay.
So let's talk about financial aid. I know college tuition now is crazy. One of my girlfriends just told me her son is accepted to a private school and it's going to cost them $75,000 a year. I have no idea how that's going to work, but how do you someone start applying for financial aid?
Well, first of all, the first step for any student, for any school in the entire United States, everyone starts at the very same place, which is completing what's called the FAFSA application online. That's the FAFSA federal application to apply for grants, loans, any kind of financial aid. That's the first step. And then you list which school you're going to go to on the FAFSA. They give you space to list several different schools in case you haven't decided to narrow down to the one school yet. The FAFSA information is then sent to all the schools you're interested in, and then you complete your file. And based on the FAFSA information and other criteria, the school determines your eligibility and they award your financial aid.
And when do they have to do that?
The file starts the 17-18 FAFSA, so they complete 17-18 like right now, right away. And then October 1st, the government start opening up application earlier than before. And this October 1st, you can actually do the 2018-19 FAFSA for fall of next year and get really ahead.
Okay. Let's get into some, you know, situations in the family that could affect financial aid. So if a student supports themselves financially, do they have to include their parents' information?
Unfortunately, I talk to students every day, including this last week, who try to insist they're independent because they pay their own bills, and I totally sympathize. There's a set of 13 questions on the FAFSA. I call that the dependency section. If you can legitimately answer one or more of those questions yes, then you're independent, which will mean you're 24 or older and or married or have children and several other questions. For those who answer all the questions no, which means you're under 24, you're not married, and several other factors, then you're considered dependent. Whether your parents help you or not, you have to give parent information and be processed as a dependent student.
But then what happens if the student's parents aren't together? Do they still include information?
If the biological parents, mom and dad, are not physically living together, whether they were married, divorced, married, separated, or never married at all, if they're not together, the student only uses one of the parents. And the rule of thumb is the one that you choose is the parent that you live with now or last lived with. And then once you determine which of the two parents that would be, if that parent has remarried and there's a step-parent in the house, then it's that parent plus step-parent's information.
Okay. And then what happens if you don't know where your parents are, like the foster kid?
Well, actually, that's separate, by the way.
Okay.
Speaking of foster care, one of those 13 questions I was talking about that could determine dependency, one of them is asking if a student was ever in foster care since the age of 13. For those who say that, yes, I was in foster care after the age of 13, they're independent automatically.
Okay.
Just based on that.
Okay.
But then really what we're talking about here is students who don't have relationship or contact
yep.
with their parents.
Yeah.
They weren't in foster care, or they were in foster care, but only before the age of 18 and not after, or the case may be. The government gives us in financial aid to all schools in the United States. They give us opportunities to do what's called special circumstance. And in this case, it would be called a dependency override, which means the student's coming to us and saying, hey, I know based on the FAFSA questions, I should be dependent and put my parent information, but my situation is extenuating. I don't have relationship contact with my parents. I work those kind of files every day. I've had several already this year. And it's different situations. One of them, her mother deserted her when she was 6 years old and she never saw her again. And then the father went through like 10 or something marriages where sometimes he wanted her to live with him and sometimes he put her off to the grandparents. That's a real situation that just happened with a student.
Yeah.
Or one parent's in jail. The other parent, they could track them down if they had to, but they're a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep.
So when there's that situation, and some things are concrete across the board, no matter what school you go to, and some things can vary. One of the things that varies is what exact paperwork to give and some of the criteria. What you'd want to do, the student, is talk to the financial aid office and say, I don't have a relationship with my mother or father. I want to request a dependency override, and they'll explain the routine.
That makes sense.
And then if they give everything the financial aid office asks for, and if the financial aid advisor is able to approve them, then we make corrections to the FAFSA for them to show we've made them independent and the parent information is not required for them.
I just think this is really interesting because I actually didn't know about the special situation of students who are kind of in that situation. So I think that's really interesting. And it's really eye-opening for me at the very least because that's not something that I've had to experience.
Yeah. What happens if, say, a family's income gets reduced, one of the parent gets laid off, can they reapply then? Like, in the middle of a school year.
You can never reapply. You can only do a FAFSA one time each school year. And that's an important thing to know, by the way. Sometimes people do a FAFSA and think it's the one application for all their years of school. You actually reapply every single school year. But to go with the question you're asking, so here's an example. This fall starts the 2017-18 school year, and it's based on the household's income from 2015. So let's say January of this year, one of the parents got laid off, and now 2017 income is going to be reduced quite a bit from 2015. That's another special circumstance request that you can do in the office. At my school, we call it an income reduction. But basically, again, the student goes to the financial aid office in person or phone call and says, hey, you're determining my financial aid eligibility based on old information. My mom, my dad, or myself, we've lost our job. Our income is much less now. What can we do? Again, there's paperwork to fill out and documentation to submit. And if the financial aid office approves you, then again, we go into the FAFSA and make corrections for you and do it in a way to where we make corrections showing this is not that we're correcting mistakes the person made about their income. This is a correction to say, hey, their income is reduced. And we change the amounts to make it current to what the income is this year. And not always, but many times that gives them additional eligibility.
Okay. Is the financial aid award the same for all school in the sense that someone that's going to a public university is going to be a lot less than saying to a private school? Does financial aid termination based on how much tuition is?
Part of it, yes. Part of it, no. So first of all, pretty much everyone is familiar with a grant called the Pell Grant. And of course, people are familiar with student loans. When it comes to how much you can receive a Pell Grant and how much you can receive in a student loan, that will be the same no matter what school you go to in the entire United States, whether public, private, state, or whatever, a community college, the Pell and loans are going to be the same. It's just that at a least expensive school, those funds are going to go further. In a more expensive school, they're not going to go as far. Now, aside from the Pell Grant loans, there are other different funds, campus-based funds, like state grants, the Federal Work Study Program, private grants, other funds, that those can be more. And some schools have, the more expensive schools may have additional funds that they award that a less expensive school may not have. And also, if let's say an inexpensive school and a state school, I'm sorry, an expensive school has the same grant, the more expensive school can choose to give more of that grant, a higher dollar amount than a smaller school.
Okay, so it's in the grants that you have to look at then if you want more money to a higher tuition school.
Well, and there's also other forms of loans. Some schools, for example, offer the Perkins loan. A school I previously worked at offered the Perkins, but where I work now does not. A Perkins loan is a separate loan that you borrow from the school itself in addition to the student loans that you get from the bank or the government. But that varies from school to school. And so there's other loans as well that you could be introduced to, alternative loans.
Basically, the 2017 school year is pretty much wrapped. So then they're starting again in September, end of August. When do they have to apply for that start financial?
For fall, they should have already applied. Every school financial aid office, this is one of the things that will vary. Every school financial aid office across the U.S. has their own what's called priority deadlines. For example, where I work, March 1st is our priority deadline for summer, April 1st for fall, and November 1st for next spring. So the exact date will vary from school to school. And you can still apply after that date. The thing I always point out to students about the deadline is by applying on time and meeting the deadline, you guarantee yourself two things. You guarantee yourself to be awarded before payments due because every single semester, there's hundreds or thousands of students having to pay up front because they did the paperwork for financial aid late. So you guarantee to have money in place on time, and you guarantee yourself to receive all the funds that you're eligible for before some of them run out. Because Pell and loans, those two funds don't run out. Everyone who applies and qualifies will get them. But all the other campus-based funds are limited, first come, first serve.
That's great information. Now, you talk about other sources of financial resources. There's like the scholarship, and I know there's thousands and thousands of that. Two questions. What are other financial sources that can help? And what about scholarships?
Well, first of all, there's like a million different scholarships. There's many ways to find them. First, whatever college you're going to attend, go on their website and search for scholarship information because every school has some amount of scholarship information. It may even be a list of scholarships that that particular school offers their students. So in like where I work, we have a foundation office that does scholarships for our students. So there's going to be the internal scholarships you apply for at that school. And also in the departments, like if you're going to be a music major, talk to the music department. They may offer music scholarships, that kind of thing. Also, you should check with employers, both the student's employer and parent employer. Sometimes parent companies offer scholarships for their employees' children. And sometimes a student's employer may offer scholarships or may offer tuition reimbursement. Tuition reimbursement is where you have an employer that says, hey, if you take some classes and pay for them and do well, we'll pay you back for them. Now, sometimes there's a dollar limit that they'll reimburse you for tuition up to a certain amount. Sometimes they have a requirement of what grade you make. So there's different criteria involved. But if you get pay up front for a class, even if you use financial aid and your employer reimburses you, that's a bonus. Otherwise, there's many websites to do searches for scholarships. There's books in the libraries. There's apartment stores. For example, I had a girl years ago that was just shopping at Target store one day, saw a flyer on the bulletin board about coupons and things that said they were offering a scholarship to the community, people like you and me shopping there. She contacted them and applied for the scholarship and got $5,000 from Target. And so check with a lot of departments. JCPenney is also one, I believe. Many department stores are giving scholarships. They get tax credits for doing that, and it helps them. So check out the department store websites. And then my all-time favorite that my friends actually tease me for is to Google. Some of my friends actually call me a Googleologist. For example, I had a friend years ago going to school for nursing. So to help my friend, I Googled for nursing scholarships and found quite a few. All of us have things in our life like, I wonder if I can get a scholarship because I'm a child of a vet. I wonder if I can get a scholarship for this or that. Google those keywords along with the word scholarship, and you'd be surprised what you'll find.
Yeah, because like you said, some of them might not even be listed at your school, and they're like foundation. Sometimes I'm just reading articles in the newspaper, and you know, some child died, and the parent started a foundation for scholarship based on whatever the child had.
Yes, and even the department at the college where I am that awards scholarships to our students directly, there's been many times, including just a couple of weeks ago, that I've heard someone say, hey, our foundation office is having trouble giving all their scholarships away because there's not enough applicants applying to qualify.
Wow.
And so that's sad when schools are like, please, please apply. We're trying to give money away.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's like money out there to be given away and we don't know about it, which is very sad.
Exactly.
Can you talk about the work study job? I know when I was in college and I got grants and scholarships, they required me to work on campus, but I got to keep that money.
Overall, as far as most schools, especially at least where I work here in Texas, there's two different job categories. I don't know if all schools have the same or not, but in general, there's the student assistant job and there's the federal work study job. Student assistant job, when a department on campus hires you, they're paying your salary out of their department budget. When someone hires you on the campus as a federal work study worker, they're receiving basically a free employee because your salary is being paid by the government through financial aid. Either way, there's a few benefits to the student. First of all, if you get a job on campus through federal work study or student assistance, which by the way, they limit you to 20 hours a week, and that's just because they want school to come first and they don't want your grades to suffer because you're working too many hours. When you get a job on campus, like I have three girls that work in my office right now, it's so convenient because when the girls drive to our campus here in Frisco to go to school and to go to work, they're there for the whole day. They go to those classes, come downstairs to our office, and they go to work. So it's the convenience of having school and work in one place and not having to rush across town to get from one or the other.
Yeah.
A second convenience is sometimes when you have an employer outside the college, like working for a department store or some company, some of them will work with you in your school schedule and be wonderful. And some of them won't care and say, look, these are the hours we need you, make it work. We have students all the time, including like a girl I talked to 2 weeks ago, they have to drop their classes because their employer changed their hours. Another benefit to working on campus is, again, we're putting school first. Like in my office, we tell the student workers, you make your schedule first. Then we make your work schedule around that. So in working on campus, you're getting an employer who's more apt to work with you in your school schedule. And so it's just a lot of benefits there. And also with federal work study, when you earn income as a federal work study worker, you still pay taxes on it and file taxes to the IRS and all that. But on the following year's FAFSA, that income is not included. You do put your income on the FAFSA, all of it, but there's a separate question that basically says, hey, out of that income that you earned, was any of it federal work study income? And if so, how much? So for example, if you earn $10,000 that year and $5,000 was work study, you'll put in $10,000 as income, then you'll put in $5,000 as work study, and that $5,000 is excluded back out and is not used to determine your financial eligibility, and that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
That's because I know that this past year at school, I had a federal work study job, and I just know that it was really convenient for me because it was really helpful just being able to go through that, and because just like you said, I didn't have to include it for the following year for financial aid. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think it's good that the college students be allowed to work because they're going to have to work when they graduate. So at least this is like getting their feet wet, but it's not compromising their school and the reason why they're at school.
Another thing I do want to mention is I can't say always because the rules about work study and how many hours you can work and this and that is the same across the board. However, the salary amount will vary from school to school. You know, the current minimum wage right now is $7.25 an hour. At the school where I work, we pay our student workers $10.75 an hour. So sometimes it gets you a better salary than the typical job off campus.
Mm-hmm. That's really great.
Yeah. I actually have a quick question. So I know that you mentioned that the maximum number of hours to, from school to school is about 20 hours a week. But I know that there's a lot of people who have to work student jobs that require you to work more hours. And it kind of sucks for a lot of those people because a lot of people haven't been able to record those extra hours past those 20 hours. But they still have to work them anyways. So I don't know if you've seen that sort of situation in other schools, Mary.
No, I'm not familiar with that. I don't know if maybe it's something that varies in a different state because I'm in Texas and I know how it works here. It's hard for me to say. I know there's some jobs that compensate you more than salary, meaning like if you work in a dorm as a resident assistant, you get a free room and board and you kind of help the dorm with the residents. Maybe that's one of those where you're obviously working more than 20 hours because you're helping with the dorm life. But I'm not really familiar with which ones may require more than 20 hours.
What do you think are some of the challenges or issues that students face and parents face regarding the financial aid?
That's a few different things that's challenging. One of them is getting that much financial aid to cover them at a school. I talk to people quite often. I've had friends whose children, they want to right off the bat at 18 go to the most expensive school. And that's all great if you can do it. A lot of people turn their head down to community college and that kind of thing. Like I work at a community college and in-county students are only paying like a little over $200 a semester to go to college for full time.
Wow.
$200-something dollars.
Wow.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's for in-county. Out-of-county may pay about $900 to go to school for full-time. That's still huge. I have a friend whose son just finished his first year at University of North Texas in Denton, and he paid over $5,000 for his semester classes.
Wow.
A lot of people want to apply for financial aid at several schools because you can put more money on your FAFSA. And I've had students say, I'm applying at five different schools, and whichever one offers the most financial aid, that's where I'm going to go. And I always say, wait a minute, that's not the only factor. If you're going to compare how much award you receive from five different schools, that's great. But also compare the cost of each of those five schools.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you may have a school that offers you more financial aid than the others, but their classes cost more as well, so that financial aid is not going as far. Whereas you may have a school that offered you less financial aid, but the cost at that school is less as well, and the financial aid does go further. You follow? So you got to compare both sides, not just what you're receiving in aid, but what's the cost that you're going to be giving out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good point. The overall bottom line, what are some of the recommendations that you could think of that would help navigate this whole system?
I mean, again, I do the FAFSA and applying everything and doing your searches, but also talk to the financial aid office. You know, when students come in our office, and sometimes it's just a matter of, hey, where else can I look for money? Sometimes we can give them websites and places to search and help guide and make suggestions. So don't be afraid to walk in the office and talk to them. One thing I do want to mention, I just thought about scholarships. There's also a lot of scams out there. We in financial aid always recommend that if someone offers you an organization or company that says, hey, if you pay us this dollar amount, we'll help you find financial aid. Maybe 1% of them are legitimate and real and worth it, but most of them aren't. For example, I had a girl, like I'll say 10 years ago, her and her mother came to my office, and the mother was on a payment plan to a company that said, if you pay us money, we'll help guarantee your daughter financial aid. She was on a payment plan to pay a total of $1,200 to this company, and all they did was help her do the FAFSA and then send it to us. That was a ripoff.
How do new parents and students figure out what's the scam and what's legit?
Do they charge you money? You know, if it's a scam, then it's not going to be free.
Got it. So if there's a company that charges you money for applying for financial aid, then that's most likely a scam.
And I want to say most likely, yes, because I have heard of just a few, and that's why I say probably 1%. I don't want to, you know, say anything incorrectly.
Yeah.
There could be a few, but look at how much they're charging. Look at the outcome. Look at the reviews. Google them. Look them online and just check into them. If nothing else, take the information from the company. Go to a financial aid office. I've had students do this. Come off and hand me a letter and say, Mary, does this look legitimate? And we'll help you look at and help you determine if it's legitimate.
Well, thank you so much. And we're out of time. And I just want to let the listeners know, if you have any questions regarding financial aid, you can contact Mary at her website, encouraginglife.com. And please support her. Buy her book, Uplifting One Life at a Time, on Amazon. And if you're looking for a speaker, she's an awesome, dynamic speaker. Any parting words, Mary? Any shout outs?
I want to shout out you, because you're doing a show for parents and you are doing everything you can about empowering parents. And that right there, Jacqueline, that's one of the most things needed in this world right now. Yes, encouragement is needed, but also encouragement and guidance on how to parent and to help parents to help their children. I can't even tell you from my experience of working with college students in foster care, we need better parenting and more help with parenting, and that's what you're given, so you're awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Brian, any last word? Shout out?
I actually have one quick question. Sorry, this will just be really fast, Mary. So I know that you mentioned being able to reach out to different resources when you're a student, but I know that for me, one trouble that I had when I was going into school was I didn't really know where to look when I was first completing the financial aid application. And I know you said there's resources out like on Google and on different sources online, but do you have any words of advice for someone who's going into college for their first year, not really sure how to navigate the process and is kind of just overwhelmed with the amount of paperwork that they have to fill out?
I would encourage them to literally come to the financial aid office. I have students that come in and say, you know, what do I do? I'm not a financial aid. Just come talk to us. We'll give you information. We'll give you guidance.
Even if the student isn't a student at that particular school, like they're, for example, if you're still a senior in high school, but they have to submit the FAFSA information for their freshman year in college the next year, would that still be okay?
We do it all the time. We actually also, my department, we go out to high schools in the DFW area all the time and do financial aid talks. And we know that when we're talking to those students, they may or may not be coming to our school. We don't care. We'll help any student. We have computers in our office for students to do the FAFSA. We'll help them there. It depends on, I mean, everybody can vary as far as who's more interested in helping or this or that. But I know for me personally, I don't care if I'm helping someone who's coming to my school or going somewhere else, because it's all about empowering someone to get their education and they don't have to come to my school. Let's just get them going to school.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary. And thank you, listener. Keep on learning and keep on growing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured. And after listening to the show, go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.